Hello and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Story. I, of course, am one of your hosts, Yeshri Upasani, a paranormal believer.
And I'm Arva Raghunathan, the skeptic.
And on this episode of Behind the Story, we're going to be uncovering the world of one of humanity's oldest supernatural creatures. But first, if this is the first episode of ours that you're listening to, then welcome. This is the podcast where we talk about stories that inspired famous horror movies. However, this season, instead of talking about our usual ghosts, demons, and poltergeists, we're venturing into the realm of the scarier supernatural creatures, like vampires, zombies, and of course, as today's episode follows, werewolves.
Today's episode is inspired by the movie Wolfen. It was released on July 24th, 1981, and it follows a New York City police detective who is trying to solve a case involving a gruesome death that seems to be linked to feral animals. The movie stars Albert Finney, Diane Venora, and more.
Now, before we get into the lore of werewolves, we wanted to remind you to follow this podcast wherever you're listening to it on, and follow us at Behind the Story on Instagram with a period between the I and N, and on Twitter with an underscore between the I and N. Also, we're donating all of our funds this season to the Women's National Law Center to help empower women through legal action.
And now, let's learn about the origins of werewolves. All right, so let's get straight into it with the origins of these furry creatures. It's time to go all the way back to when people first started talking about werewolves. You might think I mean Gothic era Europe or the medieval times, but no. We're going to go all the way back to 2100 BC with the Epic of Gilgamesh, which depicts the first transformation of a human into a wolf. While this story is an epic and the transformation is seen more as a one-time occurrence by magical powers, around 425 BC, Greek philosophers, namely Herodotus, wrote about the tribes of people who changed into wolves for many days through the year. He called this tribe the Nauri. The Nauri was from Scythia, an area part of modern-day Russia where it's quite common to use wolf skins for warmth, especially in colder months. The myth of werewolves soon became integrated with history, as a state of Greece called Arcadia worshipped a slightly different pantheon of gods, led by Lycian or Wolf Zeus. Around 380 BC, famed philosopher Plato wrote about the protector-turned-tyrant at the shrine of Wolf Zeus. In his writing, a character says, quote, "The story goes that he who tastes the one bit of human entrails minced up with those of other victims is inevitably transformed into a wolf," end quote. Literary works point to evidence that members of Wolf Zeus's followers would mix human flesh into their ritual sacrifices. Both Pliny the Elder and Pausanias discussed the participation of a young athlete, Demarcus, in the sacrifice. When Demarcus was compelled to taste the entrails of a young boy, he was transformed into a wolf for 9 years. Recent archaeological evidence suggests that human sacrifice may have been practiced at this site. TheConversation.com provides an interesting history on the myth of an ancient king that popularized the werewolf legends. The most interesting aspect of Plato's passage concerns the protector-turned-tyrant, also known as the mythical king Laocoon. Further expanded in Latin texts, most notably Hyginus' Fabulae and Ovid's Metamorphoses, Laocoon's story contains all of the elements of modern werewolf tale: immoral behavior, murder, and cannibalism. An Athenian vase depicting a man in wolfskin circa 460 BC depicts a picture of this. In Fabulae, the sons of Laocoon sacrifice their youngest brother to prove Zeus's weakness. They served the corpse as a pseudo-feast and attempted to trick the god into eating it. A furious Zeus slayed the sons with a lightning bolt and transformed their father into a wolf. In Ovid's version, Laocoon murdered and mutilated a protected hostage of Zeus, but suffered the same consequences. Ovid's passage is one of the only ancient sources that goes into detail in the act of transformation. His description of the metamorphosis uses haunting language that creates a correlation between Laocoon's behavior and the physical manipulation of his body. Quote, "He tried to speak, but his voice broke into an echoing howl. His ravening soul infected his jaws. His murderous longings were turned on the cattle. He was still possessed by bloodlust. His garments were changed to a shaggy coat and his arms into legs. He was now transformed into a wolf," end quote. Ovid's Laocoon is the origin of the modern werewolf, as the physical manipulation of his body hinges on the prior immoral behavior. It is this that has contributed to the establishment of the monstrous werewolf trope of modern fiction. Laocoon's character defects are physically grafted onto his body, manipulating his human form until he becomes that which his behavior suggests. And, perhaps most importantly, Laocoon begins the idea that to transform into a werewolf, you must first be a monster. The idea that there was a link between biology, or appearance, and immoral behavior developed fully in the late 20th century. However, minority groups were most often the target than mythical kings. Law enforcement, scientists, and the medical community joined forces to find quote-unquote cures for socially deviant behaviors such as criminality, violence, and even homosexuality. Science and medicine were used as a vehicle through which bigotry and fear could be maintained, as shown by the treatment of HIV-affected men throughout the 1980s. And I think it's interesting to note here how a lot of stories that we've seen so far about these mythical creatures with deviant behaviors include society pushing these narratives onto minority groups.
That definitely is interesting. I think it's that's really fascinating. I think especially like the whole idea that like first and foremost to like transform into a werewolf, you first must be like a monster and all that kind of stuff. Like I think the origins of werewolves, I think specifically, just date back so much further than I think some of the other creatures that we've talked about.
Yeah.
That like but like still have somehow to some extent maintained a very similar story slash idea.
Yeah, definitely. I think like since the age of time, it's been the whole thought of like you do something bad, you're probably gonna turn into a werewolf.
This and is just the way like, the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't see that with any of the other creatures. Like vampires could be like saints before, but they're still gonna turn into a vampire if, you know, their situation permits.
Right. It's interesting. Definitely interesting. But of course, because I do, I've got some real life cases. Let me take this moment now to apologize for how absolutely terribly I'm gonna say some of these names. A lot of them are European in some way or just something that I can't pronounce well, and I deeply apologize. Okay. The first one we're talking about is Theus of Kaltenbrunn. So, living in Swedish Livonia in the 17th century, Theus of Kaltenbrunn was an 80-something-year-old man with a particularly troubling secret. Several of his neighbors believed him to be a werewolf and one that actively communicated with the devil. When local authorities brought him in for questioning, they were astounded by the testimony Theus gave. He told them that he was a werewolf, one that had given up the lifestyle only 10 years prior. Before that, he confessed how on St. Lucia's Day, Pentecost, and Midsummer Night, him and other werewolves would strip naked and turn into wolves. Then they would kill farm animals and eat them. He also claimed that werewolves were agents of God who would battle the devil and bring back all the things that were stolen from God and taken to hell. Which I think is interesting, especially considering all we just learned from Arvin about this whole idea of like bad people are werewolves. Like, is this guy... was turning over a new leaf, you know? He was starting the new dawn of werewolves that were going to give back to God. So I guess, you know, in some extent, good for him. But he might have also been crazy. the next guy we're talking about is Mikhail Light. So in modern-day Germany, Mikhail Light lived in the town of Musis. He was an unpopular and cruel chief magistrate. But in 1685, he died. Immediately following his death, a wolf began terrorizing and killing residents of the town. Several townsmen reported seeing the wolf regularly visit Light, so it became assumed that he had simply turned into a werewolf. You know, like how one does. The way these people killed the wolf, though, was pretty messed up. After they murdered it, they paraded it around through the streets, cut off its muzzle, dressed it in human clothes, and then put on a wig and mask on its face so it looked like Light. Even more disturbingly, the corpse was preserved and put on permanent display at a local museum. Fun. Moving into the 1800s, we have Manuel Blanco Roma Santa. So born in 1809, Manuel was widely believed to be Spain's first serial killer. In 1833, he became a traveling salesman, guiding travelers around Spain and Portugal. His murder was committed in 1844, and after that, it was said that he murdered over 13 people. When he confessed to the murders, he also told prosecutors something far more terrible. He claimed that he was cursed with lycanthropy, but when asked to turn into a wolf, he said that the curse had passed him. You would think that it was all just a ploy to get him from going to jail, but when forensic examinations were done on the 13 bodies he confessed to, four of them were revealed to have been committed by real wolves. He was still charged for the other murders. Now, the last one I have to talk about is Peter Stump. So this is perhaps one of the most famous cases of werewolves, and it happened in the late 1580s in Rhineland, which is modern day Germany. So Rhineland had been seeing tragedy after tragedy. People were being killed left and right, and their bodies were being found everywhere. The townspeople assembled a hunting party to go and get the wolf that they thought was responsible for all of these murders. And in 1589, they managed to corner the wolf. Only when they approached the animal did they realize there, cowering on the ground, was not a wolf, but instead Peter Stump. What really convinced the town was that the wolf was missing its left forepaw, as a hunter had cut it off, and Stump was missing his left hand. When on trial, Stump confessed to having made a deal with the devil that allowed him to turn into a wolf. Stump was very brutally executed. And thus concludes these very gory real life cases. But let's take it away to Arvind to, do what he does.
Of course. So, to start off, a very interesting take that I'd like to share that I saw during my research was actually that even if the transformation a human went through to turn into a werewolf was supernaturally possible, the energy required to shift bones, grow fur, extend nails, and all of the internal changes along with it in such a short period of time would physically generate so much heat as a byproduct of the reactions that the person and everything around them would be burnt to a crisp. And of course, it's evident that werewolves don't exist from the changes themselves. A human's bones shifting so dramatically and the rapid growth of nails simply aren't possible. Also, there would be a lot more werewolf attacks and turns if they were changing once a month. Someone is bound to accidentally bite a family member or just an unfortunate bystander, and within a year, a whole town would be werewolves. This is especially true if you treat the popular myth that these werewolves lose their mind or just, and are just bloodthirstiness in their change as true, which most do assume. Now, on yesterday's cases. First, we have Theus of Kaltenbrunn in the 17th. This was during the 17th century, so the history could be a little fudged on it, but it's more than likely that he was just a confused man or mentally ill and believed himself to be doing all of these things, especially with no physical evidence or eyewitnesses of the event. Also, all of his actions could just be described by someone with severe mental illness and thinks they can turn into a wolf. A human can just as easily break into pens and slaughter animals. Now on Michael Leist, the gruesome tale just seems more like the murder of a wolf in the wrong town at the wrong time. Leist was said to have died, and as far as I remember from werewolf myths, unlike vampires or zombies, one must be turned before death, and werewolves are more beasts than an undead creature. The parading of a wolf's corpse and dressing him up in Leist's clothing are just horrible acts done by the villager to a wolf who's probably in the wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe for all we know, Leash had the wolf being fed outside the village, and maybe he was taking care of it. And as soon as he died, the wolf came looking for the food that he was feeding it and was caught, unfortunately, in the village. Now on Manuel Blanco Osmanta, this one's an interesting case with actual forensic evidence and some of the murders being done by wolves. But my question is, if these were murders by wolves, why are they associated with Manuel? Since he confessed for some of those murders, I feel like this is more likely just a cover for his story, like Gatsby said it could have been, where he just thought, okay, I came across these murders. They were obviously done by some wolves or something. I'm gonna take credit for these murders so I can make the case that I was a werewolf. Also, just a thought on this, but werewolves are supposed to have different characteristics than wolves themselves. So I feel like if the forensic team came up with the fact that the murders were done by wolves, they were probably actually done by wolves because werewolves, the claws would be much larger. It's a human-sized hand, so all of the scratches would be bigger and be a lot more difference associated with it. It wouldn't look like a normal wolf attack. Maybe for all we know, this dude trained wolves up and he just had them attack people. There's a lot of things that could be happening. And now
Well,
Peter Stump.
to interrupt you,
Okay.
maybe they just didn't like maybe they saw that it was different than like regular wolf fur, but it was the thing that they could just like attach it to the closest. So they went with it. And to your question about why are they associated with Manuel in the first place, well, maybe it's because he's a werewolf, Arvin. Maybe it's because he's a werewolf.
But he's not. So I would think that, because they don't
Did you
exist,
ever think that maybe it is?
Do you ever think that maybe it's not?
But it could be.
But it can't be. Anyway, on to Peter Stump. The most common theory for what the true story with Stump is that he did not literally transform into a wolf, but that he would cloak himself with the skin of a wolf when seeking his victims. At his trial, Stump confessed that the devil himself gave him a magic belt of wolf fur at age 12 that, when he put it on, transformed him into, quote, the likeness of a greedy, devouring wolf, strong and mighty, with eyes great and large, which in the night sparkled like brands of fire, a mouth great and wide with most sharp and cruel teeth, a huge body and mighty paws, end quote. When he took the belt off, he believed, he returned to his human state. Using lycanthropy as a scapegoat and a combination of a potential illness and just a wolf skin, Stump had a story to tell the judge. And I think on this case, with people saying that they cut off the left paw, I believe, of the wolf, and he also had his left arm gone, if he was wearing a wolf skin when they cut off the left paw of the wolf, that would also be his left arm. So that would make full sense there as well.
All right. Well, you know, before I ruthlessly destroy everything Arvin has talked about, let's talk about the pop culture aspect of werewolves. Okay, so werewolves, perhaps unsurprisingly, have been everywhere in the pop culture sphere. In 1933, American author Guy Ndoré published The Werewolf of Paris, a horror novel that followed a werewolf through the Franco-Persian War. In 1941, the film The Wolfman first publicized the creature to global audiences. It created the idea that wolfsbane and silver bullets could destroy the monsters. In the next decades, werewolves were the subject of films like I Am a Teenage Werewolf and the further solidifying this pop culture lore we've created. More recently, we've seen werewolves less as evil, throat-ripping creatures and instead as helpful friends. In J.K. Rowling's third book in her Harry Potter franchise, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, one of the professors who helps Harry throughout the series, and in that book specifically, turns out to be a werewolf. And of course, perhaps most notably, in Stephanie Meyer's teen romance series Twilight and the movies that followed it, the character of Jacob is one of several werewolves in a pack. That's right, guys. It's Taylor Lautner time. Happy Speak Now, Taylor's version that came out last month to everybody who listened to it. I hope you loved it. I hope we're pumped for 1989 because I am. And yeah, bless Taylor Lautner for Back to December. Anyways. That thus concludes the pop culture segment of this episode, which I think is probably one of the most interesting things when it comes to werewolves is what I would like to call the werewolf redemption arc, which was from only being perceived as terrible people, as monsters, as like blood sucking, but like not in that vampire way, like in that really gruesome way, to being super hot six pack guys in movies and in general, just like very like friends, right? Like these are like the friends of main characters. I think that's interesting because we didn't necessarily see that happen with what I would consider is the opposite of werewolves, which are vampires, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think it's always been such a difference of like, I think people honestly see it more as like werewolves could be friendlier because they're like, they're more akin to an actual animal that we already know, whereas that'd be like wolves, dogs, anything, whereas vampires are like literally just undead creatures that live off of human blood.
And I think there's almost in a weird way like an aesthetic to vampires. I think especially like right now as we've like entered this age where everything needs to be like commercialized and marketed in like a consumable way, I think we've created that whole like dark academia aesthetic, right, that like centered around vampires. But with werewolves, you don't really have an aesthetic other than like wolves,
yeah,
and nature. Like you don't necessarily have something that you can commercialize to fit a werewolf.
Yeah, I think also it's the thought that like werewolves turn into werewolves from humans against their will, and they are humans most of the time, whereas vampires are just always vampires, and like they always have that need for blood and all of that.
That's true. That's very true. Now I know this might be hard for you to admit, Arvind, but when you were a kid, when you were a little kid, did you ever believe in werewolves?
Probably. I don't remember, but
were you like a full moon, like did it cross your mind? Like if you were driving with your parents and you looked out the window and you saw a full moon, like did it flash in your mind like, oh, werewolves might be out tonight?
No, I think at the age when I was old enough to recognize like what a full moon is and associate it with werewolves, I was old enough to know that they weren't real.
I did. I was like, man.
You still do?
I still do. I still do. I'm not going to lie.
Exactly.
I think that's okay. If we have come in our modern age to associate the full moon with anything, it is 100% werewolves.
Yeah.
And I think the idea of it in theory is exciting, but I think if I was just a regular person who every full moon was forced to turn into a werewolf, like I think I'd get sick of that really fast.
Yeah, 100%. I'd be so sad by the end of it. And just completely losing your mind, your memories. You don't know
Literally,
what's
I feel like
happening.
it's also just so tiring, you know? Like, first of all, your whole body has to like reconjoin to
Yeah.
become this wolf, and then you lose your mind, right? I'm assuming like you black out when you turn to a werewolf, right? Like you don't
Yeah.
remember what you did, what happened, and then you have to unconjoin, and then you wake up the next day, God knows where, and you what just have to go to work again?
I feel like the fact that you black out makes it a little bit easier because if I was waiting, like not being able to do anything in my own mind for that many days, it'd be worse. But I feel like if as long as you don't feel the pain of turning or turning back, and if you could chain yourself up somewhere, then it wouldn't be that bad. Because then you're just missing like 3 days, but you know what you're doing during those 3 days.
True, true. That's true. I think it's just like, I think what makes it bad though, like, is what I'm assuming the pain aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, 'cause that's gotta hurt.
100%.
It's like, I almost, or we're like entirely wrong about werewolf lore, and it actually is like a choice. Like, you can just like turn whenever you want to.
That would be wild.
That would be why. But my thing is, what is the appeal of being a wolf?
Yeah. When would you want to turn into a werewolf? You can do most of those things as human, unless you're genuinely trying to kill someone.
Right, like so I kind of get the vampire appeal a little bit, you know? Like if
How?
you want to live forever,
Oh, okay.
that's a good way to live forever. If you know, like dentures will probably never be an issue in your future.
Think
Like,
if you already have some condition where it's like people who can't go out in the sunlight or something like that, like might as well just become a vampire then.
exactly. But it's like, what are you gonna do being a wolf? You
Yeah.
know, you despite this despite like running away from hunters, like I feel like you're actually losing so much.
Yeah. Wait, I just had a thought. So let's say let's go back to the wolves get turned into against their will into werewolves.
Okay.
Let's say you were allergic to wolf fur.
Oh
What would happen?
my God, you're just like popping Claritin like it's nobody's business.
Yeah, no, but if like because if your allergies are still active when you're turned, your wolf mind is not gonna know what's happening. So you're just gonna be like sneezing and dying
Oh
as a
yeah.
werewolf.
Oh
And now I'm
yeah.
imagining getting chased down by a werewolf who's sneezing like 100 times.
Can you just stop running for like 1 second? I just gotta, and then it's like sneeze after sneeze after sneeze.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the most respectful like werewolf killer ever.
I've got to pop my inhaler real quick. Just give me a
Yeah,
second.
yeah. Don't just can you turn around, please? This is really embarrassing. I don't want you to see me like this. Oh my God, that must suck.
Yeah, they're
That's
definitely
gotta
like,
be
if werewolves are
so
real, at
terrible.
least one person out there has to be feeling
Oh, for sure.
that.
Oh, I hope they get like a support group. 'Cause that's gotta suck.
But what can they do? There has to be like werewolf researchers out there trying to solve it.
True. Maybe there's like special allergy medication they have.
Could be,
Like
could be.
more, yeah, like more powerful than like what we could.
What would they use? Because they technically have the same like availability to resources, unless like werewolf blood or something is some magical cure.
Like we don't know, maybe there's like an underground secret werewolf society.
Guys, if any of you from the Underground Secret Werewolf Society are watching this, please let us in. We want to
We
see
won't
you.
tell anyone, we promise.
As long as you don't bite us, we're chilling.
Yeah, but maybe you know, like if you guys throw parties down there, send us an invite.
Yeah,
We'll
100%. We will
pop
stop
on
by.
over. Yeah.
And conversely, if any of you are part of a vampire underground society,
True.
hit us up.
True. We like unknowingly cause a supernatural war. Our bad, guys. Our bad.
We get invites on the
Yeah.
same
We have to go to both, but like they can smell it on
Yeah. We're just dead.
us. Oh, God. Okay. We hope you enjoyed this very fun episode of Behind the Story. And make sure to follow us at Behind the Story on Instagram with a period between the I and N, and on Twitter with an underscore between the I and N.
And make sure to come back in 2 weeks to hear the very last episode of this season. And spoiler, it involves a very special guest. But until then, don't forget
that there's always more to uncover behind the story.
See you next time.